8 minutes after 9. Welcome to Friday, the 22nd day of May, and American DA Live, brought to you by Landscapers Corner, celebrating 10 years in business. Your one-stop shop for all your landscaping needs. Landscapers Corner, 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Call 225-9433. Our question of the day is brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts. iFixFoundations.com, 859-254-7700. The question is, and I know your answer, Ray Larson, are you leaving for this holiday weekend? Are you traveling? And I know the answer is no, because you got your grandkids this weekend.
Huh? Yes, we do. And it is, I slept with one, the oldest one, last night, and it was like sleeping with a beach tuna. Got kicked in the head.
Flipping around. Three years old, right? Mm-hmm. The oldest one, yeah.
That's right.
You guys are going to be worn out.
Already are.
Are you okay? Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's no wonder that God gives children to young people. Yep. Yesterday's results, do you support Senator Rand Paul's efforts to keep parts of the Patriot Act from being renewed? Do you have an opinion on that?
I do.
Which is?
I don't like the idea that our own government is snooping on us. I don't like it.
Well, 53% agreed with you. They said NSA goes too far in what information it collects about U.S. citizens. 47%, so it was pretty close, said we can't be too careful when it comes to keeping our country safe.
That's right. But I don't like them snooping on me.
Okay.
I don't mind them snooping on you or Aspen.
But not you. All right, exactly. That's like people say minor surgery. Ain't no minor surgery done on me, maybe on you. All right, your office sends me a description of what we're going to talk about each week, and this one made me sick when I read it yesterday. This one's not pleasant at all, not that any of them necessarily are, but tell us who you brought and what we're talking about.
Okay, well, this what you got yesterday was research by one of our summer interns, Shannon Murphy.
Thank you, Shannon.
And she's a pretty impressive kid. They're all kids. But in 2014, the social services, Child Protective Services, was contacted by a local hospital about a child that was born. And it turns out to be an incest case in which the father had been engaging in sexual intercourse with his 14-year-old daughter, and she became pregnant, had the child at home, and went to the hospital, and then the hospital notified Child Protective Services, and all of a sudden, we have a case going on. And with us today is Matt Brotherton, who is the Lieutenant Matt Brotherton with the police department, who's in charge of the investigative bureau that deals with these kind of cases.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Aspen Carlisle is an assistant Commonwealth attorney who was responsible for prosecuting the case.
Great. Aspen, good morning.
Good morning.
Aspen's from Hawaii. We've had her dad on the air before because he's a prosecutor there.
He was the DA, and he was the mayor of Honolulu.
Right. But he's retired now, is he?
He's back in private.
Back in private. Right. Get way up on that mic. I don't like that mic.
Back in private.
Yep. Back in private. Well, tell him what you asked about him. Yeah. All right. So is it routine that when a child comes in to have a baby that certain things happen at a hospital?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I want to first say, Jack, that the reason we talk about cases like this is to just show the sorts of things that our police department and our social services network has to deal with, even here in our community, Lexington. And this is, this doesn't happen all the time, but it happens.
Yeah.
And Matt, if you would, why don't you talk to us a little bit about this case and any other kind of case like this that you're aware of?
So I'm the lieutenant over the special victims section. The Bureau of Investigation is broken up into a bunch of different sections. And in my section, we investigate adult sex crimes, domestic violence, elder abuse, human trafficking, and also any crime involving children. And a case like this, what is not uncommon about this case is that we get referrals from the Department of Community-Based Services, the Cabinet. They're all sorts of names that they go by colloquially. But my detectives work very closely with their team of social workers. And in fact, if there is a case involving physical or sexual abuse of a child and the alleged perpetrator has what's called care, custody, or control, we are in a supportive role to the Cabinet workers. And there's a team of special investigation social workers, Pam Hanshew, worked on this one, and they are excellent investigators. They are as good as any investigator in the police department, and we're proud to work with them.
You know, that's where Mary Houlihan was.
Was she?
She was a really top-notch investigator with that group, and we captured her because of her enthusiasm for crime victims.
But in this case specifically, the hospital started to have concerns. All hospitals have social workers on staff, and they pay attention to these things, and doctors will report things that start to be suspicious. And in this case, a 14-year-old girl gave birth. The hospital found it suspicious, contacted the Cabinet. They contacted us, and one of my detectives at the time, he's now a sergeant, Aaron Greenleaf, went to the hospital and spoke to the young woman who was 14 with Pam Hanshew. And the sexual activity actually took place when she was 13.
So tell me, this wasn't at first reported as a incest case.
Well, there were suspicions because it was a 13-year-old who was having sex and gave birth, and the hospital is generally going to report that to the Cabinet on its face. And it was during an interview with the young woman but also her mother, that there became concerns that it was the father. That it was the young woman's father who ended up getting her pregnant.
Did she say that in the interviews with her?
She was ultimately interviewed and acknowledged that she'd had sex with her father.
Yeah.
What, Aspen, was this first reported as a rape case?
I believe that when they first interviewed the victim, being the 13-year-old who got pregnant, gave birth when she was 14, she said that it was a stranger and she didn't see his face. She was reluctant to identify it as her father, but eventually did say that she had been engaging in sex with her father, and that was the father of her child. So dad and grandpa were one and the same for this baby.
Whoa. So talk to us a little bit, Matt, about how the police go about... So you got the statement from the daughter, but what else do you have to do? Because we want to make a solid case out of this, and so what do your detectives do?
So first they're going to get any sort of interview statements they can get from the people who might be involved, the suspect, victim, any witnesses to the incident. In this case, you add the young woman, her father, and then her mother, and statements from them. But then what we're, of course, going to do is we're going to get a DNA sample from the child, from the infant, get one from the mother, and then also get one from who we believe was suspected father of the infant. And then we send that off for lab testing and attempt to establish with some sort of scientific proof the paternity of the child.
And so that was done.
That was done, and the DNA came back showing that the 14-year-old woman or 14-year-old girl, that the father of her child was her actual father.
Okay, so Aspen, you get this case in our office.
I get this case in our office. I speak with Sergeant Greenleaf. He comes to grand jury and testifies. He was indicted quickly and ultimately pled guilty within the first couple of months.
Okay, well, talk to me a little bit. Let's get back to this idea of what sort of, when you get the fact situation that Matt has described here, what do you start looking at to charge this guy with?
Age was important in this case because it makes the difference between the various degrees of rape. So that was something that we looked at. I also spoke.
What, before we go on, what are the parameters, age wise?
So in this case, it was a rape second, and that was because the father was over the age of 18, and the victim, he was, I believe, 32 at the time, and the victim was under the age of 14, and she was 13 when this occurred.
So that's a rape in the second degree.
And
what are the penalties for that?
Rape in the second degree is a Class C felony, so that carries a penalty of 5 to 10 years.
Okay.
And Ray, there are two components in a rape charge in Kentucky. One is going to be the issue of consent and whether that consent was because someone forced someone to have sex, whether the person was intoxicated to the point where they couldn't give consent. But also in a situation like this, we're going to be looking at where they fall on the age spectrum. The age of consent in the state of Kentucky is 16, but if someone's under 14 or under 12 years old, those can increase the penalty.
And so that's what we had here. So when you're looking at this, you got to have the proof that number one, that this, who is the father of this child, and you have to be able to prove the age of the victim, and you have to prove the age of the father, the defendant in this case.
Right.
You use the rape charge. Statutory rape is a kind of a term that's out there.
I've always heard that, but I don't know what that means. Statutory, what does it mean?
Well, the age becomes the issue, and it's against the law for people of certain age to have sex with somebody of a certain age. And Matt gave us the parameters there.
I mean, the age of consent in Kentucky is 16. So you're not allowed to have sex with anyone who's under 16 years old. That is
regardless of how old the other person is.
Correct.
Okay.
And regardless of consent.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, and that's what we can talk about after we finish discussing this case. We can talk in general about the statutory rape because we run into that a lot in Lexington and all over the country, I think. Okay, so what else? So what was this guy charged with?
He was, in addition to the rape charge, he was also charged with incest. And for that, you needed to prove either sexual intercourse or deviant sexual intercourse with someone that's a blood relative. And so, again, they sent the DNA off in this case, and it was a 99.99% chance that the defendant was the victim's father. And so that meant that element. She was also able to memorialize for the detectives remembering a time when she had oral sex with her father. And so he was charged under the deviant.
Okay.
So in that DNA testing, we not only had to show that the defendant in this case was the father of the infant, but also that he was the father of the victim.
So it sounds easy, but it's kind of complicated.
It always does, doesn't it? We're taking a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty@wblkam.com. It's 21 after 9. And if you need a loan, there's no hassle at the castle. The biggest discounters of diamonds and fine jewelry. Here's 28 after 9. Ray, this is a real, as you know, a 2-minute short segment, so you fill it however you want to here.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to do is I'd like Aspen to tell us how this case was resolved. You had a pretrial conference, and at a pretrial conference, you talk about the facts, and one of the things you do is say, if you choose to plead guilty, this is what we would recommend, right?
That's
all right,
correct.
Tell us about it.
We had a pretrial conference, told him this is what the facts would be. He didn't say a single word to me. I made him an offer. That offer was 6 years on the rape second degree and 10 years on the incest. Both of those are considered violent offenses because of the victim's age, and so he's not eligible for probation on either offense, and he has to serve 85% of it before he would be eligible for parole.
And what did he choose to do?
and he pled guilty within several status hearings. So he pled guilty to that recommendation.
Now, if he'd gone to court, if he had gone to court, obviously he could have been found innocent, but because you had the DNA evidence on him, that would be very slim chance of that. But if he'd gone to court, is he gambling that he's going to get less time with the deal you're offering than a jury would give him? Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
And in these kind of cases, that's a bad gamble.
Yeah, I was going to say, jury would not be too thrilled with this guy.
Well, what happens is if you got the women will all of a sudden cross their arms in front of them.
Right.
In a defensive posture.
Sure.
And the guys will start snarling. So that's what happens with juries in these kind of cases.
Right.
Now, and animal cruelty cases.
Yeah, you've told me that before. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with animals because they'll kill you in the jury. If this girl had been 16, how would that have changed the situation?
It would have changed the rape charge. It would not have changed the incest charge.
Okay. But as far as penalty was concerned, it would change it.
It would have changed
significantly, right? Significantly or no?
No, not significantly.
No.
It wouldn't have changed the incest charge, but it would have changed the rape charge.
All right, we're going to take a real quick break, get an update from the Information Center. We'll be right back. If you want in on this subject, if you have a question or a comment, 253-5959, touch *590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. Before 10, American DA Live, and with us, of course, our star of the show, Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson. He likes it when I say that. Lieutenant Matt Brotherton from the Police Department, Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Aspen Carlisle. In case you just joined us, in case you just tuned in, this involves the rape of a 13-year-old by her biological father. And there is... A 30-something-year-old that has sex with a 13-year-old is sickening. When it's the biological father, it makes it even worse than if it were a stepfather. Is it worse in the eyes of the law?
Sure. That's why you have an incest law that makes
changes it, the thing, makes it even worse. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a call real quick. This is David. Hey, David, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I had a sister who had a special needs daughter by her husband, who was not her biological daughter, but still she was like a daughter. But anyway, she was a 65-year-old person. She's a 35-year-old, I think, special needs individual. And they had a sexual relationship with a 65-year-old man. It went through the court system, and not the court system, but it went through process determine whether she go to the court system in Winchester, and nothing ever happened to this fellow. I just wondered, is that legal in Kentucky, or is that just a fluke situation?
What you're talking about?
65-year-old stepfather and a special needs 35-year-old.
No relationship.
Right. Not even a stepfather, just a 65-year-old man.
Right. Well, the question is this a vulnerable adult? And
her mother and father is also, but the court system didn't think.
The situation is defined as a vulnerable adult, and she can't give consent. Now, the problem, he says nothing happened, but you also have to be able to prove it. And if she's not competent to testify, then the question is, how are you going to prove it? And that you run into a lot of those kind of situations in some of these mental institutions where you get allegations of sexual misconduct by staff members with patients, and you just the proof just isn't there. And so my guess is, first of all, it's illegal if the person is not competent and a vulnerable adult, because that's the same thing as a statutory rape thing.
The question is always going to be an issue of consent. If special needs can mean lots of things, and the question is going to be, was this person able to give consent to sexual activity? And back to Ray's point about evidence, I mean, that's the difficult thing about these sexual assault cases where the perpetrators are often people in a position of trust, that we may not get the crime reported to us for several years after they've happened, and then it's an allegation. I mean, in this case that we spoke about earlier, where the biological father impregnated his daughter, it's horrible that this happened, but the other side of it is we actually had physical proof to prove that this sexual interaction took place, which often we don't have.
You don't have usually. Okay, thank you, David. Let's go to Robert. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. This topic, Jack, like yourself, just makes me sick.
Yeah.
And raising girls are terribly hard to do, particularly when age of consent is 16, yet they're not an adult until they're 18.
Yeah, that's weird.
It is awful. And I had a problem with my oldest and her 19-year-old boyfriend when she was 17. And the only legal authority I had to make him stop was to threaten to have him served with contributing to the delinquency of a minor at where he works. And he got the message real quick. He didn't want his life ruined, even though he was willing to ruin her life. And so that was the only thing I had. And I think we ought to change the age of adulthood or the age of consent, but we shouldn't have a two-year disparity. The other thing, Ray, that I thought I'd bring to your attention is a study done by Dr. Nadine Burke Harris out in California on the treatment of children, particularly those younger than three. They have been able to quantify that depending on how you are treated as a child, they can measure and estimate what kind of diseases you're going to have as an adult, such as heart disease, cancer, and so forth. It's quite an interesting study, and I think your staff probably ought to be aware of it because it just lends more importance as to why we want to protect our children. She did a video, a YouTube video on TED.com. I don't know if you've ever watched those, but they're very well done. And the address, the web address is on.ted.com/ROQCI.
Okay, all right.
I think that's a zero, but it's hard to tell with these letters on these things. It's either a number zero or a capital O here. But recommend you take a look at what Dr. Nadine Burke Harris has done, because it'll just add more ammunition to your quiver.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. This case that Aspen has talked about, Matt, resulted in a guilty plea. Didn't go to trial. And there are a number of reasons that people don't go to trial. And Matt was talking a little bit about that off the air. But some of them do go to trial.
Well, we had a case several years ago where a young woman reported to a school counselor, and then it got reported to us that she had been raped by her father. She also was pregnant. We were able to confirm through testing that her pregnancy was created by her father. But when he was confronted with the DNA results, he denied them. He took it to trial. And ultimately in trial, his defense was that she must have gone into the bedroom and grabbed a condom out of the trash can after he'd had sex with his girlfriend and impregnated herself. And that case I found uncommon, because the majority of these cases where we have sexual assault of a child, we either have overwhelming evidence, we were able to retrieve DNA, we have a confession, we have all of this, and the person pleads guilty because they don't want, if they go to trial, all of their friends and family and supporters are going to hear all of this evidence against them. And generally what people do is they will plead guilty so they can continue to maintain their innocence. Either that, or unfortunately what we'll have is an allegation by someone years after the incident occurred, and we'll have no physical evidence. We'll never get any sort of corroborating evidence or corroborating statement by the defendant. And unfortunately, we're unable to pursue criminal prosecution. And that's where, if I may talk about the Child Advocacy Center, the value of the Child Advocacy Center is, and this is a center here in Lexington, that it's one-stop shopping for interviewing the child to find out about the allegations of the assault, medical exam, and what I consider most important is the ongoing therapy for that child. Because even in these cases, for example, this case that Aspen got a guilty plea on, just because this guy's going for 16 years, or if he went to prison for the rest of his life, that doesn't suddenly make that victim whole, doesn't suddenly make it where she's going to make good relationship decisions for the rest of her life. And that's where the services by the Child Advocacy Center come in, and I think they're invaluable, because I think we'd all agree that if we had to choose between a successful prosecution where someone goes to prison for the rest of their life or successful therapy that helps this victim put their lives together, we'd all pick the therapy.
We're going to take our last break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. It's 11 minutes away from 10 o'clock, and Ray, we've got 6 minutes roughly to wrap this up. Go right ahead.
Well, I think we've kind of dealt with the case we brought today, and I think we've kind of given a shout out to the Children's Advocacy Center, because it's a great resource in our community that's been here since 1994, and matter of fact, they handle all of Central Kentucky. And it's so anybody got an extra check hanging around, send it over there, because they deal with donations very well. I want to kind of talk about an issue briefly with Aspen that is getting to be a bigger and bigger and bigger deal, and that is drugged driving. There are more drugged drivers on the road, according to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, than there are drunk drivers on alcohol. And Aspen tried a case in which a person was charged with manslaughter for driving under the influence of marijuana. And that resulted in a not guilty verdict. And what I want to do is talk a little bit about the difficulties in dealing with marijuana impaired drivers. And so what did you learn?
Well, what I learned in this case is that, one, people just don't know as much about marijuana as they do alcohol. The active ingredient in marijuana is THC, and it doesn't act the same way alcohol does. With alcohol, your body will get rid of it at a rate that doctors can determine for the most part. THC doesn't work the same way.
Is there a blood level like we have for... No, there isn't.
No, there's not. So we That's know, one of the biggest
yeah,
problems.
You can do a breathalyzer or take a blood test, and we can say whether you're legal or not, but it's harder to prove with marijuana.
It's much harder. Yeah. I learned that in trial, that it's much harder to prove with marijuana.
And we'll have people call if we want them to. We don't want them to say, oh, I'm a better driver when I'm stoned. Uh-huh.
Right. Well, what's going to happen with the influx of marijuana use around the country, we're going to have more and more and more of these situations of drug drivers, and the scientists are going to have to come up with a per se number at some point of what's the level of THC in your blood. And just like we've done with alcohol, but it's going to take some time. And so I think what we've instructed the collision reconstruction unit to do is to treat these all of these drug driving cases like the old-fashioned DUI stops, field sobriety tests, that sort of thing, as opposed to relying on the breath test or the blood test.
It's just, so you do the actual touch your nose and walk a line and all that stuff.
They got to show that they're impaired.
I see.
And So that's where we
did
are.
Did this case, did they do that in this case?
They couldn't in this case because the driver who was the defendant was also seriously injured.
Ah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, I wanted to bring it up because it's an issue that I want the public to be aware of, that drugged driving is more common now than drunk driving.
Here's another one. Distracted driving is another thing, and I just bought my wife a new car, and in the car it has hands, it's got the Bluetooth, and I guess they all do now, but our insurance person said next year get ready because they're going to start giving out tickets for talking on the phone with a handheld phone, which I think is probably a good idea, because you can't tell me that you can operate a vehicle with one hand, be on the phone, and be safe.
Well, where is your attention is the question.
Right.
And that's why they call it distracted driving. Matt, you got something?
Well, and the issue also with hands-free is that the distraction doesn't necessarily come from physically dealing with the device. It's that if you're driving and you're in a conversation with someone and you see something up ahead that requires more attention, the person on the other end of the phone doesn't know that, and they're going to continue to talk. And
whereas if they're in the car with you, they would stop talking.
And so it's not even really a hands-free
issue
versus no hands-free.
That's interesting.
It's that something else is drawing your attention away from you that isn't paying attention to what's happening on the road. And that is what a lot of the research shows is the real issue.
That's interesting. I've never heard that. So hands-free doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Wow.
Texting is something that is just...
Oh, yeah.
Is out of hand, and when you drive to work, probably even when you come to work in the middle of the night,
yeah,
and you see somebody, they'll be sitting there doing something on a cell phone.
Well, now in my wife's car, and we will conclude on an up note.
Oh, good.
I can text my wife in this new car, and a lady comes on, will interrupt the radio or whatever's on, and will read to her the text that I sent. And so my wife had my grandsons in the car with her the other day, and I texted I'll just tell you what I said. It was for my grandson's gratification. I just crapped my pants. And the lady said that. And my 11 and 9-year-old grandsons think I'm the funniest guy on the planet now.
Well, did you?
I really didn't.
Oh, okay. Right.
Guys, thank you very much. Have a great Memorial weekend. I'll be back Monday morning at 6, 5 Central.
Lee Cruz.
Your public service has been quite effective this